This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
I'm sure they're going to be nervous. I hope they're nervous. It's a great opportunity. I mean, it's part of life is, you know, having opportunities. You're going to be a little nervous. You're going to be a little excited, and I think that's great. I think that's part of what makes this tournament so unbelievable.
Coach, you obviously went on the radio last night or yesterday and talked about kind of working with somebody in the athletic department. I just wanted to know if there were any updates that you had for us about it.
Yeah, we're playing Florida. It's a big matchup for us. Like, this is all about the Sweet 16, and these guys enjoying this as much as possible. I've enjoyed it tremendously.
That's Kevin Willard, head basketball coach, University of Maryland, yesterday. San Francisco ahead of their Sweet 16 matchup against number one seed Florida. And you heard the question, you know, any comments on your comments from the day before in DC radio? And he deflected like a brilliant strategist to the game itself, because that's the task at hand. And he talked about how good Florida is. He talked about how brilliant their guard is, Walter Clayton Jr. Talked about it. He also elaborated a little bit more. Well, he shoots 48% when he drives to his left. He shoots 38% when he drives to his right. He really got kind of clever with the media. But what he did, which dodged the question. Now, we know news out of College Park yesterday was Kermit the Frog's going to be the commencement speaker for the university. And Jim Henson, of course, who created the Muppets. Maryland grad, passed away 35 years ago. But no one like Daryl Pines, for instance, I guess, is actually in San Francisco with the basketball team. The athletic director, former, is now in Dallas, AD at SMU. So Kevin Willard, who was given a term sheet, I guess, to stay on as head coach, didn't sign it. And they got real verbose, no one get in here, talking about what he wants to see from the program moving forward. Well, Keith Cavanaugh, TerrapinTimes.com, reporting today, Kevin Willard's gone. Win or lose tonight. Now, if they win, they get to the Elite Eight for the first time in 23 years. If they lose, they're on a plane back to College Park. What, probably later tonight from San Francisco. And then the reports were this morning, they've already put together a list of coaches they'd be interested in. And from what we understand, Dwayne Simpkins on the list, friend, took American U to the tournament. Former Terp. Tony Skin was an assistant at Maryland, now at GMU. John Calipari's name was mentioned, whose team is currently in the same region as Maryland. But from what Terrapin Times and Keith Calvin are reporting, it's not those three guys. It is an established coach, been to Sweet 16s, been to Elite Eights. No, Vinny, it's not Rick Pitino. And he was in this year's tournament. Now, whether or not this comes to fruition, but from what we understand, that's the scope. That Willard is basically gone. And the ball was in Maryland's court. And if you want to use a tennis analogy, they hit it out. Or basketball, they dribbled it out of bounds. That sort of thing.
Right. I think I'm just ready for all of this to be over. I mean, this has been, it's been very annoying the past couple of weeks. To have your first Sweet 16 appearance, all the hype of this season from Derek Queen, the five-star status coming in, living up to the hype, all the transfers clicking, the Crab 5 nickname, all the fun they had along the way. It should have been about the players the entire time. We should be celebrating them. We should be talking about them right now. But instead, we're talking about the coach because he made it about himself.
A week ago.
Right. And the thing that really bothered me, him deflecting, it's what he should do. It's what he should have done a week ago before they faced Grand Canyon. But it was convenient for him to try to leverage at the time. Now a deal is done, so it's no longer convenient for him to bash the university, so he can deflect. But his comment there was, well, I'm so proud of this team, you know, watching them have all this fun, they deserve it. Like, are you? Are you having fun?
And keep in mind, too, that since Queen hit the buzzer beater against Colorado State, he's become sort of a national celebrity. Of course, if you followed college basketball, you've known he's been an elite prospect for years. He was freshman of the year in the Big Ten this season. Made first team all conference, according to one of the voting cycles there. So you've known who he is. His first game, he had 20 and 20 rebounds and points. But by hitting the shot, then giving Baltimore a shot out, even LeBron James apparently gave Baltimore and Derek Queen a shout out, because LeBron, of course, and Carmelo, he grew up in Baltimore. That was all kind of intertwined. Not only is the University of Maryland getting run, Baltimore City is getting some run. So it's a good look for all of us involved. But Kevin Willard just kind of napalmed the athletic department, and in particular, Damon Evans last Thursday, doubled down on a couple of other occasions talking about the NIL money's out of control. Players, what, $2-3 million? I don't know if this is true, and I'm not going to say that it is. There was some alleged he didn't even show up to the team dinner or some nonsense, or told the team he was leaving when he met with them. He did say on DC radio a couple of days ago, I'm the head coach at Maryland for now, or I'm staying for now. But according to Keith Cavanaugh and everybody at Terrapin Times, he's gone, Joe. And not only is he gone, the replacement has already been chosen.
Right. And if you're Villanova, this is your guy. This is who you wanted. I mean, you're all in on him at this point. You're not going to change your mind. But are you happy with what you're seeing? That this is your coach? You know, forcing his way out of a good situation? Or, I mean, look, say what you want about the athletic department, the future of it. Right now, today, the present is a good situation. You're in the Sweet 16. And this is how your coach, who's never been to a Sweet 16 before, is choosing to spend that trip. How miserable of a person are you that this is your first accomplishment in your career, and you're spending it trying to line your pockets with more money?
But to try to think like him real quick, you're going to Villanova. That's it. There's no football program there. Certainly not a Big Ten level program. So whatever NIL monies they have, usually I would assume vast majority goes to the basketball program. And it's only a state above. Glorious championship history. They haven't been in the tournament in 3 years. And Jay Wright's handpicked replacement, Neptune, didn't get it done. So they understand they don't want to fall into irrelevancy. And Willard maybe feels more comfortable closer to New Jersey. Who knows?
Well, he did name drop Jersey earlier.
Yes, he did. Guessing he's had this job for a while. That allows you to become arrogant and cocky and say the things that you want to say when you've already got one in your pocket. That would be what I think. And then he was just kind of getting back at all the stuff that he wanted to get off his chest that he's been dealing with for 3 years with Damon.
Yeah, and he's been complaining behind the scenes for a couple of years, too. But University of Maryland still task at hand, 6.5-point underdogs. Taking on Florida, number one seed. We'll break down the Florida Gators. We'll talk to Walt Williams, as a matter of fact, about all of this. Hey, Walt Williams. He came in the aftermath of Len Bias with Bob Wade. Then Coach Wade was fired. Gary Williams came in. Then they got put on probation. As good as Walt was, he never got to play in an NCAA tournament. He could have left to the highest, well, not highest bidder, immediately after the probation. He chose to stay and has kind of been the foundation guy for the program. But we'll talk to Walt about that and tonight's matchup, which is a daunting task for sure. And the Orioles. Opening day. I told Rashawn to wear Terps and Raven stuff. That's what I got going on. Got my Oriole hat, throwback 1966. Got my Maryland sweatshirt. Nolan's wearing his Oriole stuff. Orioles 307 today. Zach Eflin on the hill against Jose Berríos. I'm guessing we'll get the lineups here in the next couple of hours or so. We'll definitely be talking Orioles with Steve Molesky. We're going to do our predictions for the season coming up here at 10:30. Get more into the offense. Who's the team MVP? Maybe the rookie that busts out a little bit, if there even is one. So stay tuned for that. But the season begins in a big way. And Tony Taters will be taking on his former team. And Nolan McGraw, your thoughts on Anthony Santander? Wanted to stay. They gave him an offer he could refuse and did. And I guess, you know, showed loyalty to Toronto because he said all along they were kind of the team that was on him first and eventually got him.
Well, we did see it in spring training when the Orioles played the Blue Jays. But still, today, for that real game action opening day, it's going to be very jarring seeing him in an opposing team's colors and actually taking meaningful at-bats against his former team. It's going to hurt. But look, hope he goes 0-for-4 today with 4 strikeouts. It is what it is, right? You're a division rival now, you know, and that's it.
When he comes to Baltimore, he gets cheered, and rightfully so.
Yeah, first
he
game
did
back.
Nothing wrong.
Standing ovation, first game back.
No doubt about it. He didn't leave, didn't say ill about the team. Rule 5 draft pick, he actually thanked the Orioles for giving him the career that he's had. But at the end, they didn't want to pay him. Tyler O'Neill, for all intents and purposes, will replace him. And let's see if he can live up to the task. Small prediction, Tyler O'Neill will not hit 44 home runs this year. I'm going to go with that.
Hater.
Yeah, but we're going to do it. Your predictions for the Orioles. Terps tonight, feel free to get in. You hate Nolan Willard. It looks as though he's out the door to the point where they've already picked a successor. It's insane. We do know that Kermit the Frog will be the commencement speaker for graduation this year at the University of Maryland. Draft profile later in the hour. Going to Toledo. We'll talk about that. Steve Molesky, top of the hour. Our colleague now here on The Fan talking about the Orioles season and, you know, expectations. We'll do our record predictions. Yeah, I'm kind of looking more at what last year was.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Was Brandon Hyde announced yesterday that Dean Kramer is going to pitch game 3 and Sagano is going to pitch game 4. It's a 4-game series. Start the year in Toronto. Remember, it's a controlled environment. So there's no threat of weather, unlike opening day, perhaps. We were talking a couple of days ago as we did our Orioles predictions for the 2025 season. Who's going to lead the team in wins? Who's going to have the lowest earned run average, innings, and all of that good stuff? And I'm going with Povich to finish with the lowest earned run average. And I don't know why. We'll just call it a hunch for sure. But I think the confidence level has increased dramatically. He's added a new pitch to his arsenal, whatever that fancy term for a changeup is. So he looks like he can go out and deal. Now, even though he's a smallish guy, he could bring it mid-90s. So Cade Povich, there's upside there. Now, is he in the rotation out of necessity? Yeah, because Grayson Rodriguez isn't pitching. And as we've talked about all week long, I don't see him pitching anytime soon. I mean, we're already targeting Kyle Gibson
being ready for May 1st with no sure date for when Grayson Rodriguez will even throw a baseball in anger. Yeah, he was long tossing, but as we said yesterday, Felix Batista, after he blew out his elbow, was long tossing at Fenway in September of that season. So we'll see how it goes, but I've got a lot of confidence in Cade Povich. I think it's the smart move because Suarez could be more of a swing guy for you, where Povich by trade is a starting pitcher.
How many do they give him? You know, like if he struggles early, how many do they give him?
And he'd have to be abysmal because you still have to wait till your replacement.
Yeah.
Now, of course, with opening day and the possibilities of rainouts as you get into other venues, you know, there could be pushback days. For instance, Monday could be a weather issue here in Baltimore.
Now 70%.
He'll get April, I would think. Now, if he deals in April, does that, and everyone else is acceptable, does that mean Kyle Gibson's ramp-up time or the wait time for him is extended a little bit more? I mean, now we're talking about Kyle Gibson, a guy who had no other offers, who had contemplated retirement, coming in here and being like Jim Palmer. And yes, he's solid and he makes his starts, but if Povich is doing well and Sagano and Crayer, et cetera, I don't think you need to rush Kyle Gibson up at any time. Because if Povich is leaving the rotation, I would think that means he's leaving Baltimore.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you had an influx of talent that maybe there was a scenario where Povich could get some time in the pen, but I don't know how productive that is for him long term. And let's be honest, I mean, he earned it out of spring training. It's not like he got it by default just because of the injury. If Povich didn't have a great spring, they could have easily handed it to Albert Suarez, a guy who they had a little bit more confidence in coming out of last year. Sure, he's up there in age, and last year was kind of an anomaly for him, but that was a little bit more of a stronger track record than just Cade Povich's strong September. So it's exciting to see, and outside of Chase McDermott, he's your only notable pitching prospect, or that's now a rising star in the majors, to be excited about, and McDermott isn't healthy right now. So Cade Povich is the guy by himself.
Gibson is more insurance policy, I would think. If we, hopefully we don't, but if we do, we got a guy that has experience.
Right, and whether it's April, May 1st, as Hyde said, or somewhere later in the season, he will be needed. I can guarantee you
No doubt.
At some point he will be needed. When is, that's the only question.
Again, I mean, they're already telling you when they expect Gibson to be ready. No idea when Grayson Rodriguez will be, which I think is pretty telling. But as we get into the predictions for the upcoming season, 2025, let's get more to the offense. Vinny and I agree that Adley Rutschman will be the leader in regards to batting average.
Yep.
Nolan, you went with Westberg.
Mm-hmm.
I took Mountie to lead in home runs. You guys went with Gunner, which I would do. And maybe the angst for Gunner isn't all that great. He could be back, I don't know, by the time they hit the road next week after the series against Boston. But he'll be back before May, it seems.
And I think Mountcastle is going to have a big year.
I think he's going to have a monster season.
Yeah, with that wall, I think his head's right. I think he's going to help make up for Santander's power numbers.
Now, here's an interesting one. Man, because stolen bases aren't what they used to be. And Cedric Mullins is usually the leader. You have Mateo. And by the way, you saw yesterday, we'll talk to Steve Molesky about this. Mateo's not in Toronto. Soto's got a locker. And so does Brian Baker. And I would think you don't need to be Colombo to start connecting dots in regards to that one. But it's either Mateo or Mullins. Nolan McGraw, will start with you. Who leads the Orioles in stolen bases? And to follow it up, will they have maybe multiple guys with double digit?
They should.
Stolen base.
I don't see any reason why they shouldn't. I mean, they've been talking a big game this spring about, hey, we want to steal more bases, be more active on the base paths in general. Well, it's time to actually put your money where your mouth is, because Cedric Mullins might still be the most capable base stealer on this team, and he would be still my pick to lead the way. But there's no reason that a Gunnar Henderson can't take his 21 and start pushing 30. I don't think Jorge Mateo is going to play enough to maybe match what he's done in the past. That's my only concern with him. But when he's out there, the speed is there, no doubt about it. But yeah, I mean, love to see more from Cowser, more from Jackson Holliday, those guys getting a little more active. But as far as a leader, I still got to give the nod to Cedric.
The only thing, and I agree with you with Gunner, but the only thing is I want to protect him a little bit. I don't want to put him in those positions where he could possibly get hurt, you know, stealing a base.
That might fall on deaf ears. I mean, we see the way he plays the game sometimes.
You got to give him the signal unless he's got the automatic go. But I'll pick Holiday because they seem like, you know, in spring training, every time he got on, they're sending him. So, he's bunting, you know, to get on base. So, if he can get hits and have good on-base percentage, I think Holiday's going to be the guy.
Yeah, I think I'll go Mullins because he'll get the most at-bats. Gunner, and then Holiday third. But could the Orioles have three guys with 20 stolen bases this
Hopefully.
Year?
Yeah. And I think, really, look, team total last year was 98. And we got to get that up.
So that's, there's 60 right there. You know what I'm saying?
So I think 98, just to put it in perspective, middle of the pack at best in all of Major League Baseball last year. And, of course, there's been an uptick in stolen bases since the rule changes. So there's no reason why the Orioles should be middle of the pack. They should be, with the talent they have, I mean, top 10, quite frankly.
Well, they should be more aggressive on the base pass. There is team speed. Look, yep. Westberg's not exactly lugging the piano, and neither is Kowser. Nope. So they've got some dudes that could get out there and do some things aggressively. So we'll go Mullins. Vinny's going Holiday, who I think finishes in the top three. But who knows? If Jackson Holiday establishes himself as an offensive force, then maybe he could surpass said.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if he got 20, it'd be a hell of a year for him.
Yeah. 2020? Do we want to get into those predictions yet?
Why not?
We'll save that for later on in the program.
Singles.
So, Jackson Holiday, we know he's going to play today. Will he be at shortstop? Soto's there. That could possibly be the dude against Jose Berríos. I keep refreshing, waiting for that lineup to come up. But if you have any predictions for the Orioles, we'll do our win predictions. We're going to pick the division winners and ultimately, of course, the World Series champion. Terps taking on Florida. This could be Derek Queen, Julian Reese, Miguel. And, of course, George Geronimo's last game, and maybe even Kevin Willard's. That appears to be the trend that we're looking at right now, not to bring down the vibe. Hey, I'm only worried about from what happens from 7:39 tonight to what happens to around 10 o'clock tonight. And if Maryland loses, when we come in tomorrow, we'll be talking about the end of the season and possibly the end of an era. And if they win, they're going to the Elite Eight for the first time in 23 years, and that's a good thing. That's Seldon Miguel, whose journey to Maryland included a couple of other destinations. Of course, friends with Bruno Fernando, former Terp. They played on the Angolan team that tried to qualify for the 2024 Olympics. And this is a guy that has been deadly from beyond the arc. Now, Kevin Willard, when he used to come on the show, talked about how he has evolved as a three-point shooter. He started at Kansas State. 22.5% from beyond the arc. Then 20.5% from beyond the arc. Transferred to USF, South Florida. 33%, which is still not great, but better than 20. And then last year, 39%. And this year for the University of Maryland, 43.1% from three. So this is a guy that is more than doubled 3-point shooting percentage since he first came in to the collegiate ranks. So he's going to be important today because he's part of the Crab Five. But Nolan, he's a frustrating player to watch at times because when he heats up, it's like everybody back off and just let him do his thing. And then sometimes you don't even realize he's on the floor. And when you do, it's usually pointing out something that he does that's detrimental to scoring a basket here.
Yeah, I've expressed that frustration a lot of times, especially earlier in the season. But we're going to need a Selton special tonight. That's what I'm dubbing it, because there's no way Maryland wins this game unless they're lights out from three. Just being honest, as great as Derek Queen and Julian Reese have been all year as your big men, you need a full team effort, and you're going to need a barrage of threes to take down a number one seed in Florida. So Selton Miguel, need one of those 5 of 8 from three. You know, like he did against, Rutgers, Iowa. He was 5 of 9. And we need one of those games out of Selton tonight if they're going to win.
And we also need Rodney Rice to come out hot. And he was cold after that Illinois game in the Big Ten tournament.
he was in a real stink fest for a couple of games. It didn't start Colorado State well. Heated up at the second half, in the second half, and actually got Maryland in the game and had the game-tying basket. But need him to come out and play with a sense of urgency. And obviously, the number one guy that we're going to watch from the guard perspective is going to be Jacoby Gillespie. And if you look at his stats from Sunday's game against Colorado State, they weren't bad. But you could tell he was off kilter pretty much from the jump there. And Walter Clayton Jr. is going to present all sorts of problems for him. Very similar in size, too.
Right. Well, it's going to be, I mean, there's been some frustration with Gillespie this year as well. I mean, kind of a different reason than Miguel. Sometimes he'll shoot when he shouldn't, quite frankly. But in addition to that, some of his passing, maybe a little sloppy.
A little lazy.
You know, they run the fast break. They've done that well at times this year, but I feel like sometimes Gillespie's running out of his own shoes. I mean, he's ahead of the pack going at an extra gear that just isn't needed. So slow it down a little bit. You know, you can run the fast break every once in a while if you have the opportunity, but, you know, trust your offensive sets. Trust the star power that you have, 1 through 5 there, and ride that.
What annoys me about him, and let's keep in mind, we're talking about a Maryland team that's 40 minutes away from going to the Elite Eight. And last year, they were done. They were already playing golf or doing whatever it is where they were doing because the season ended in early March with Gillespie. And he's been outstanding this season. We're starting to nitpick, Nolan. He tries to get that contact around the hoop and hits the deck. And he waves his arms at the referees while his guy, we saw it against Colorado State a couple of times, his guy's out on the break. They're not blowing the whistle because you're waving your arms. The play's over. Get you off your ass and get back there and play some defense.
Right, if you're trying to leverage.
If they're not blowing the whistle initially, they're not doing it 3 seconds later.
Sure, and if you're trying to leverage for calls later in the game, well, that's something Willard's already doing. I mean, he's in the ref's ear like every coach is. From the first minute of the game until the final buzzer. It's part of the coach's job. And there's time to talk to these guys during timeouts. Bob said it best. You're not going to get a makeup call right away. You know, there's time to go over to the ref, say, hey, what'd you see there? Why wasn't that a foul? There's a time and place for that. But need full effort here when the clock is ticking.
They had a guy get elbowed in the head, and they didn't blow the whistle. You know what I mean? So if you're getting, you know, a little body contact in the paint, just get up and play D because they like that transition. Florida does. This could be one of these racehorse games.
And that's not who's good better for the big guys.
Yeah. And they're deeper, too, Florida. Yeah. As Dave LaMonaco said, they're like Michigan State on steroids when it comes to the depth. If there's a weakness, which I guess by now has been well documented from Todd Golden's team, not very good at the foul line in the bottom 200 percentile. Well, 71%. Individually, I guess okay, but in crunch time, it seems they really struggle. And against UConn was in the game because Florida couldn't hit their foul shots in the second half.
The only problem with that is the Terps don't have a lot of fouls to give with their five dudes.
Yeah, unless, well, he said, I'm going to play all my bigs.
Yeah.
So what's that, Geronimo and Gapari?
I'd be nervous about Gapari. He hasn't seen meaningful action in a long time.
No, ever since he got the flu and missed 2 weeks, he hasn't been, because he was in kind of the regular rotation. And Geronimo brings him athleticism, brings him energy. Gapari's the best athlete on the team. That guy jumps through the gym, but I think there's a lot of rust there. But if you talk about Vinny giving away fouls, there's your guy.
Yeah.
Get in there and hack a dude. And do what you have to do. We'll be breaking the game down more with Walt Williams later in the show. If you want to get in, feel free to do so. It looks like Kevin Willard's out. The replacement has already been chosen, according to Keith Cavanaugh from TerrapinTimes.com. So we'll see how this all unfolds. Orioles open in Toronto, taking on the Blue Jays. Zach Eflin against Jose Berríos. Still waiting for the starting lineup. I guess Jackson Holliday's at your shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
Westberg's at second. Urias is at third. But Levon Soto's with the team. Jorge Mateo's not. I guess that says something about something, maybe.
Vinny Serrato's Draft Profiles. News, notes, and analysis on the 2025 NFL Draft Class. Vinny and Haney. Sports Radio 105.7 The Fan.
I definitely have a chip on my shoulder. You know, coming out the MAC, they think of as smaller guys and think we don't have guys over there that compete to play at the high level, but we do, and I'm here to show it.
That's Darius Alexander talking to the media about his draft potential, his skill set, and coming out of a mid-major, what his possibilities are of being a productive NFL player. Hall of Fame's littered with guys from mid-major schools. You don't have to be from a Power Four to be that dude. But Vinny Serrato, draft profile number one, takes us to Toledo, the Rockets, defensive tackle. Darius Alexander.
Yeah, Darius Alexander, Toledo. 6'4", 305, ran 4.95, 17210. Good for a big guy. D-tackle, senior, jersey number 9. 34-inch arms, excellent. 10-inch hands, got big hands. 31.5 vertical, not too bad for a D-tackle. 9'3", broad jump. 7.63 cone. Little, not great. Not great. 4.79, 3 cone. Or 479 short shuttle, not great. 28 reps, 2.25, that's good with 34-inch arms. Now, in 2019, he redshirted. 2020, he played in 6 games with 9 tackles. 2021, he played in all 13 games with 3 starts, had 21 tackles, 1 tackle for loss, 2 PBUs. In 2022, he played in all 13 games with 1 start, 21 tackles, 7 tackles for loss, 1.5 sacks, 3 PBUs. In 23, third team All-MAC, played in 14 games, 11 starts, 36 total tackles, 5.5 tackles for loss, 4 sacks. And this past season, second team All-MAC, started 12 games, 40 tackles, 7.5 tackles for loss, 3.5 sacks, 4 PBUs. So over the last 3 years, 9 balls he batted down. His strengths, he's got size, he's got length. Excuse me, strong lower to push the pocket. He can stack at the point of attack. He has good punch, lockout, shed, and he can find a football. He's got quickness off the snap. He's a good athlete for his size with good feet. He can stack the double team. He can play all over the defensive line. He can play inside. He can play nose. He can play the 3, the 5. Uses his hands well. Shows some pass rush moves. He's got the quick arm over. He can beat guard with initial quickness. He must time his punch properly. Because what he does, sometimes he doesn't bring his feet when he punches. Now, weakness, he'll lunge and miss a lot of tackles. And that goes back to you got to bring your feet with you. You know, because you got these long arms, you think you can just reach and grab. No. And especially when you go to bigger conference or NFL. He's slow off the ball at times. Now, who had that too? Travis Jones had the same thing when he was at UConn. When he gets off the ball on time, he's extremely quick. But he'll sit there and look. And I don't know, you know, it might be fatigue. He starts to get tired. Those bigger guys, that's what happens. You get tired and you start to, you know, stand up. He'll shut it down at times. And, you know, you're playing a lot in those smaller schools. And you got to take breaks every now and then. And he'll shut it down at times, and he'll just stand and watch. He'll lose balance some with a narrow base, and that hurts him in his tackling. Pad level must stay low consistently, and we go back to the fatigue factor there, because when you get tired, start to stand up. Hand placement inconsistent. Motor runs hot and cold. You know, and that's probably why he's second team All-MAC. That's probably why in his fifth year, he's not getting paid a lot of money to go to a big school. But Darius, he has everything you want. Size, length, athletic ability, and strength. He can play all over the D-line. He has untapped potential. He's raw, needs a lot of pro coaching. But he has the tools to develop into a very good player. More potential than Travis Jones had. And I said this yesterday. I like Travis Jones. This kid has a lot of talent, but can you get him to play hard? The best way to get him to play hard all the time is, you know, he's in a rotation. He doesn't have to play all the time. That's one way to get him to play hard. He needs to be coached. And if you can coach him and he's willing to take coaching and development, he can give you some stuff in the past stuff. Because he can get off the ball and he's got some quickness and he can use his hands. But he is raw. He's raw. Fifth-year guy, so he's an older guy, but he's still raw because the coaching's not going to be as good as it was at Ohio State with the D-line coach and stuff. So you're going to take some time to develop. Throw him in your rotation because he's got size and he can play the run.
and he's going to give you, just like, how many years did it take Travis Jones? Really, you know, two and a half, you know, it took a while for him to get it too, because he was the same way. Laid off the ball at times, heavy, you know, Connecticut, he was on a crap team, you know, and he had to play every down. So same type thing. This kid is a talented kid. He's got ability. He's got length. He's got everything you look for. He just needs a lot of work.
Darius Alexander, Toledo, rated number 5 defensive tackle by Mel Kiper Jr. behind Mason Graham, Walter Nolan, Kenneth Grant, who we've talked about already, and a guy we're going to be talking about later in the program, day 2 guy.
Yeah, I think most of these details, other than one or two of them, Bob, I think they're all going to be second-round picks, third-round picks. I was listening to NFL radio or something. You know, they said that there is enough D tackles in this draft that all 32 teams could get one defensive tackle to come in and play for you.
It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Another draft profile, as we said, coming up later. Staying on the defensive line, that's coming up around 12:45. Now, we have time for a call? Yeah, let's do it. Terps tonight. 6.5-point underdogs against Florida. Could be Kevin Willard's last game, along with seniors and maybe leaving her. Their queen's gone. We know that. But hopefully they could dance into another day. Orioles open their season today, 3:07 against the Blue Jays. We'll talk about that. Steve Molesky coming up in a matter of minutes. And as soon as we get the lineup, we'll give it to you. Let's go to Randy in Georgia. Randy, what's happening?
Hello, good morning. What a beautiful day. Opening day is always the best day of the year for me.
Happy New Year. Yes.
Happy New Year. Maryland in the tournament. But what has made my day was your announcement that Kevin Willard will be leaving. This has made a great day even better. I don't like his coaching style. I don't like the fact that we never run plays. It's just throw up threes. And then, as Vinny pointed out, I think he already has another job in his hip pocket. And to go around promoting himself during the tournament when he should be concentrating on the team, I just can't. The only thing that could be better now would be for the Capitals to win the Stanley Cup. So I just was so excited about this news about Willard. And
well, for the record, I didn't break it. Terrapin Times broke the news.
I understand.
Kevin Willard blew us off this week.
No, yes. But still, you reported it on the air, and that made a beautiful day even better for me. And I just had to call in to
well, what if they win tonight, though? Are you cool with the win? I mean, do you want the season end just to get rid of him, or do you want him to go as far as they can?
Oh, I want him to go as far as they can. Look, I'm 69 years old, and I've been rooting for the Orioles since back in the Jim O'Brien days. And they can win tonight. Like, I mean, they have a chance to win. I don't think they will, but I'm rooting for them to win the whole thing, of course. But Willard, the Willard news is just is icing on the cake for me. So go Maryland, go Orioles, go Ravens, go Capitals.
Right, there's Randy in Georgia. Right, so Randy. For Randy, it's a no-lose situation for him. If Maryland wins, they go to the Elite Eight. If Maryland loses, Kevin Willard's leaving.
Yeah.
So he's happy with that.
The only thing I would say is it is somewhat of a distract, because, you know, is Willard 100% focused on Florida? And because, you know, he's dealing with probably the boosters, you know, from Villanova and getting money, NIL money for, you know, the portals open. And, you know, so he's not 100% in.
Well, don't you think it helps us leverage even more? I mean, he's got the Villanova job by all accounts, but to go deeper into the tournament,
then
his cachet goes up even higher.
No doubt.
Think the players know what's going on. They know what time it is. They're all about them right now.
Well, 3 of them are gone anyhow.
Well, 4.
4 of them are gone.
Yeah. I mean, Geronimo, Miguel, and Reese have exhausted eligibility. Reese could come back. Doesn't appear as though he will. And Queen's going to the first round of the NBA draft. And with the portal, and if Willard leaves, who's he take with him?
It's always fun. Know somebody's going.
Oh, it's always fun and exciting. The NIL, the portal, the timing couldn't be worse for college basketball, but the coaches leave whenever they want. So why should it be different for the players?